Following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're happy you can join us once again, and today is not going to be one of our cyber versions. Mr. AI Wynn was not able to join today, so we will be talking taxes and real estate syndications and maybe some news as well. But in any event, before we get started, I want to remind you that just because you hear certain discussions that you think might be relevant to your facts and circumstances, that you should never proceed with trying to implement a strategy or a tax rule without speaking with your existing advisors to make sure that the content was correctly understood by yourself and that it applies, more importantly, to your unique facts and circumstances. So for those of you that don't have current advisors or advisors that understand the topics of real estate, syndication, taxation, private real estate partnerships involving multifamily, or retirement plan rules and options to invest your funds from your retirement accounts into the real estate private partnership arena. And then lastly, we'll touch on topics involving zero tax math. In other words, how do we get to zero tax as we head to retirement? And I know a lot of people think that's a joke or simply a headline to sell books. Well, I don't have any books dealing with zero tax math. I may get there eventually as part of another book that I'm working on, but there's plenty of books out there. I would wholeheartedly recommend David McKnight's book, The Power of Zero. That was his first New York Times bestseller. And, you know, it's absolutely possible once you're, quote, I'm going to use the word refocused instead of retired. And you, along the way here, adapt your income streams to where it consists of cash flow, not taxable income. And I'll give you a good example. We talk about it almost every show, a Roth conversion. If you have currently pre-tax retirement accounts, when you start taking money out of those accounts, either to live on or the required minimum distributions, that income is taxable income. And I understand it generates some cash flow. Yes, it's cash flow, but it's not the type that doesn't incur income tax. That's what we're seeking. We're seeking things like, for instance, I mentioned the Roth. A Roth account gives you the ability, provided the distributions are qualifying, to take money out that does not go in to the taxable income bucket, nor does it go into the Social Security tax bucket, meaning that it doesn't count against the income you can earn before you hit a tax level on your Social Security. And of course, that can max out as high as 85%. And it also doesn't go into your IRMA bucket. For those of you on Medicare, I will presume that most people know what the IRMA premium is. Maybe you don't, but just in a nutshell, once you make too much money, you're having to pay the government some premium cost for your Medicare. So when you understand that, you know, there's a standard deduction that we all receive on our personal income tax, and, you know, it depends on whether you're married or single or head of household, etc. But suffice it to say that there's a level of income that you can earn that gets wiped out by the standard deduction, and that's what is our target in terms of limiting the taxable type of income streams that we take in as individuals. And so, you know, when I talk about getting to the zero tax rate, it is possible. And, you know, there's certain types of income that we can't avoid or we can't direct out of a taxable scenario in some cases. Like, as an example, pensions is one such income type. Also, I mentioned the required minimum distributions from your IRA or 401, those items or those distributions cannot be redirected unless you do what I'm suggesting, which is get out ahead of it and let's get that those buckets of funds converted over to Roth. And I know I say Roth like everyone should know what that is, and I apologize for that. I will, let's see, let me just get a definition for you real quick that will be something that's formal. Let's see, a Roth can refer to a type of retirement account, and the Roth IRA is probably the one that more people or most people would have heard of. It's a retirement account where your contributions consist of after-tax dollars. So you put money into a Roth IRA, or you can put them into a Roth 401. As many of you know, we work with clients that are seeking to adopt a self-employment type retirement plan, and we like the self-directed 401 trust, or marketing term for that is the solo K, because the variety that we adopt with clients gives the client the ability for both a pre-tax contribution should they desire or a Roth. And I could show you the math all day long, and I'm telling you, for people that are still making pre-tax contributions, you really need to slow down, sit down, chill a bit, and let's try to understand why you're doing that. And maybe you've got a good reason. Maybe the employer plan that you're involved with, if you're involved with one, and I know most of our clients, if they're still involved with an employer plan, they've got an ulterior motive. Maybe they're getting a significant match with the employer, or as one of my clients was explaining a few weeks ago, the employer he works with, and boy, these are rare, this is in lieu of getting a formal pension. The employer he works for contributes, it's a huge number. I don't want to say the number because I may be forgetting the exact amount, but let's just say it's not the normal 2 or 3 or maybe 7% match you see. It's not even a match. It's just a flat out contribution, and it's spectacular in my mind that they could do that. But in any event, once you've established a Roth IRA or a Roth 401, Your contributions and earnings grow tax-free. You can withdraw your contributions tax-free at any time. And I know, you know, there's some folks that don't seem to understand that. I hear Self-Made Millionaire on his shows talk constantly about, well, you know, with the 401, you pay it, it doesn't pay you, meaning you don't control your money. And I guess he just doesn't understand how the 401 account works, at least the self-directed variety, and those are the only ones that we can invest the funds it holds in real estate private partnership syndications. But I guess they just don't understand. You really do control your money. I know it's hard to fathom because you've been saying it for so long or been hearing it for so long if you're the listener, but you can. And as with other things that you may hear on assorted guru shows, just because they say it doesn't mean it's true. It's not a Seinfeld episode. And so you can essentially do exactly what we seek to do with our money, which is we can control our money, we can invest it in real estate, and we can refocus or do whatever makes us happy as we move through life. And then with respect to the earnings on those contributions, you can withdraw your earnings tax-free after age 59 and a half and once the account has been open for 5 years. And, you know, again, I don't even need a calculator, I don't think, to impress upon you the fallacy of the classic 401k contribution or IRA contribution that we all fell for once upon a time. And I guess it goes back to the 80s. I know when I was coming out of U of H, I started at Arthur Anderson, and I know it hadn't been too many years, I believe, since the 401 had become a commonplace offering in the typical professional workspace. But you know, the beauty about the Roth concept is that, you know, you don't get a deduction, so you don't get the little drop out of the IV bag once a year. One time you get that deduction, and then for the rest of your life you've got a partner in your retirement funds, and the growth, more importantly, the growth of the retirement account. And, you know, I don't think a lot of people understand that, because I know many times I have prospects that will call me, and as one of the intake forms that we have on our website, which, by the way, if you are interested in having us work with you, go to the website, baplanner.com, and you'll notice at the top right a forms link, and on that page there's four forms, and you know, I've got one for a retirement plan profile, and you know, the type of, I mean, the difference effectively, and the reason I need to know if we're going to work with you, is what the opportunity might be if you decide you truly want to take control of your 401 funds, where you become the administrator, you become the trustee, the custodian, etc., and you decide, you know, how, when, where, etc., to invest in opportunities, including the private partnership syndication market. And again, we focus on multifamily assets. They historically have proven to be a very successful niche within the overall commercial real estate market. But in any event, the Roth, you know, when you think about, okay, so you're going to give up a deduction this year. Let's say you give up a deduction on $10,000. So if you were a typical wage earner working in a profession, you're likely going to be in that 22 to 24% tax bracket. So if you contributed $10,000, that'd give you a $2,000 to $22,000, maybe $2,500 benefit tax-wise. So you're going to get that one time, and that's it. You know, you don't get any additional benefit tax-wise on the earnings. I mean, there's a deferral, don't get me wrong, but when it comes to how much tax you're going to pay later, the deferral, you know, is not quite as appealing or attractive as you might think, versus the Roth, where literally if you live to the ripe old age of 85, 86 is what the IRS life expectancy tables show for us males, you're talking a long time in terms of being able to avoid taxation and whatever the rate is. Do you have any idea what the rate might be in 30, 35 years? I mean, I don't know how old each of you are, obviously, but let's assume you're in your mid-50s or even call it 60. And by the way, you're not really old yet if you're 60, speaking as one who will be 65 here in another month or so. You know, we've got, it may not seem like a long time, but it's a long time when you think about the monthly living cost that you incur to continue to draw those types of payments or distributions. And so, you know, the fact that you're going to have to part with, I'm going to say on average, when I look out over the next 20, 25 years, I'm going to tell you, I see a lot higher tax rates. I mean, the only exception is if our government can get its act together, and that could happen on multiple fronts. Let's hope. I'm rooting for Mr. Trump to monetize our significant oil reserves in Alaska. I'm looking for him to succeed with tariffs to where I don't know that we can get back to where we were way back when before we had an income tax, but the country lived funded the government, in other words, off of tariff dollars. And then, we've also have the chance to monetize other assets the government owns, such as the 14,000 empty office buildings that we have. And then, I've lost track, and I know there's been some controversy over the amounts that Doge has listed on their website where they're showing the things they've discovered. I don't care if you cut it by 80%. It's still a huge number. And think about it. If we can cut $1 trillion even, half of what they're projecting, that's cut forever, or it should be, unless Congress turns around like they normally do anytime they find an extra dollar. They will spend 10 times that dollar, and that has created the mess that we're in now. But if there could be some constraint or restraint, as the it may be more appropriate to say restraint, I would suggest that we could get to a point where we can avoid the tax train that's otherwise coming. And how do I know it's coming? Is it because the Republicans consistently remind us of how much we're spending, or is it because the Democrats won't be able to soak the rich like they think they will? No, the reason I know it's coming is because you cannot collect $5 trillion or so in tax receipts each year and spend $7 trillion, north of $7 trillion. You can't do it. You run out of the ability to pay the interest even on the debt when you're in the entirety of your discretionary budget is going to pay interest on the debt, which now is larger than even the defense expenditure. Interest is in the third most prolific category of our annual budget. Medicare, Medicaid combined is in the first spot. Social Security occupies the second most prolific category. And then interest. It's crazy, over $1 trillion a year. And that's what happens when you consistently collect, $5 trillion a year like we do now, and spend $2 trillion. And lest you think that's just a momentary issue, no. The Congressional Budget Office just updated here at the end of January, just passed, they updated their annual 10-year budget study, and they show deficits on average through the whole 10 years of $2.1 trillion. And no, it doesn't stop in 10 years. That's just the period they choose to reflect. And for those of you that think, well, you know, if we could just pay down this $37 trillion, we'd be in good shape. Well, the problem is the $37 trillion that they talk about is not the totality of our public debt. It's more in the range of $150 trillion or so, depending on the assumption set that you use or different economists use. And, you know, the $37 trillion simply refers to the amount of debt that pertains to the current budgetary cycle. And as we move forward, other items that have already been voted on, already been passed into law, indexing on assorted categories of expenditure, all of that will become active and will refer to whatever that year's deficit is. It'll be some probably multiple of the current $37 trillion. And in fact, I believe, if I remember correctly, on that CBO study, again, that's the Congressional Budget Office 10-year forecast. You can find it by Googling that, of course. I believe the current budget cycle's deficit, in other words, what's now $37 trillion, has turned into approximately $55 trillion at that point in the future. It's crazy. Let's do this. We're right at the halfway mark of this week's show. Let's go ahead and take a short break, and we'll return momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be a Planner show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control and make demands. Look like a woman, think like a man, be as good as or better than. Gotta woman up and take it like a man.
Okay, welcome back with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And we've been talking about a couple of topics involving the desirability of Roth conversions, topic we seemingly talk about every week. I would say it's hyper important right now. And I was also mentioning the fact that I would be shocked if our tax rates don't go up near term. And by near term, I'm referring to the next, 28, 29, 30, so three to, or let's see, three to 5 years. And, you know, I don't believe the Democrats, I don't believe the Republicans, when they seemingly are starting more and more to acknowledge that something has to change. I don't see much by the way of budgetary cuts. And frankly, cutting the budget to the magnitude that is going to affect the current deficit, it's going to be more of a systemic or it's a policy change, systemic policy changes on the issues that involve our nation's annual expenditures. And I think, you know, the bright outlook that I see, if there's any reason to have a positive outlook, it's the Doge group that I mentioned earlier. But there's no question that if they are allowed, and with Trump's approval, to push cutting, I guess certain things they're doing with executive order, not sure how long that will continue. And I guess the good thing is, while it would be better if it was legislative options take forever. Executive actions are much faster, and granted, they may not be as permanent. Look, when you can terminate an entire department, like the Department of Education as an example, I think that won't be able to be put back easily. I would hope that if we can get some of the departments reined in, and I'm not suggesting you got to cut or eliminate all the departments. I am not an expert on governmental efficiency. I am able to recognize significant waste. I've seen it myself. I deal with customers that are GSA, Government Services Administration. We've got guests that stay at our boutique hotel properties along the Riverwalk, San Antonio, and many of them are coming in for training at the Medical Educational Training Campus there at Fort Sam, and I can tell you it's unbelievable some of the stuff that you either hear about or see firsthand that they are able to get. I mean, everything from the $200+ daily per diems for food and lodging to the, I don't know, it's got to be $1 billion or more worth of new facilities that were built at Fort Sam, Houston. I don't know, it's been probably 7 or 8. Well, no, it's been longer than that. It's been 12 or 13 years ago now when the government or the military decided to consolidate all their medical, you know, their advanced training there. And then, you know, I've noticed here over the last month as cuts are being made to the funding, of course, San Antonio is a huge recipient of government expenditure. And boy, I tell you what, you can tell whose ox is getting gored by watching, you know, the exclamations, and I'll say that, you know, I won't get into the R-rated language that you hear coming out. It's, by the way, it's what the words that we hear these days on podcasts and even in the news occasionally, it's just amazing, the lack of decorum, professionalism that people use. And I, you know, even Congress, not that I guess that really shouldn't surprise me, but I'm just curious. I mean, give me a person that's a true professional and conducts himself accordingly, and I don't even have to agree with them, but I'll respect what they have to say. But when some of these people we have in Congress, and again, podcasters, and I like some of the podcasters in spite of this, but man, how much more would I like them and approve of some of their content if it wasn't laced with expletives? And I'm still trying to understand what they think it serves. What purpose does it provide, as opposed to saying things what I'm going to say is a correct way? But anyway, that aside, so let's switch gears for a moment. We've talked about the macroeconomic topic of the day. Let's focus on some micro economic topics. And I want to mention, I was reminded this week as I was reviewing a couple of PPMs, that's private placement memorandums. So again, apologize for the acronyms that some listeners may not be aware of, but a private placement memorandum is the document, let's call it a marketing document, that you'll review before you invest in any private real estate partnership that's offered under the crowdfunding statute. And we refer to it as a syndication. And just to be clear, let me diverge for a moment and just define, you know, real estate private partnership syndications. I call those REPs, another acronym, involve multiple investors passively pooling, coming together, in other words, pooling their funds in a partnership under the U.S. Security and Exchange Commission's crowdfunding statute. A syndicator or sponsor or lead partner, there's a number of terms that are used interchangeably, serve as the manager who is responsible for choosing a property. In the case of multifamily assets, the syndicator is responsible for choosing the property, performing necessary due diligence to make sure it's suitable to result or yield the outputs that we seek as investors, and arranges its acquisition, including undertaking the necessary debt placement. In other words, they're going to get the loan. You won't, in most cases, you won't be required to sign as a guarantor on said loan. And if you're ever asked to, I would tell you to go find another syndicator. That's, you know, because you're going to own, in a typical scenario, maybe the partnership is going to acquire, I don't know, a $50 to $100 million asset or apartment property. You might own 0.008, so, you know, less than 1%, as an example. You have no business signing a guarantee of any kind. Not just the joint and several guarantee is just totally out of the question. You run from that deal. But even a qualified non-recourse guarantee, which is typically going to involve you making good on a guarantee for what we call the industry carve-outs, the, quote, bad boy or girl provisions, where, you know, your bookkeeper might abscond with, you know, this month's rents and or other types of fraud. Okay, that's the type of thing that the qualified non-recourse guarantors, qualified non-recourse guarantors, that's the phrase I was searching for, would have to step in and make good on the debt. And there's a number of ways the guarantees get negotiated. I'm just kind of, you know, trying to stay down the middle here on the typical scenario. And again, I've seen deals that the syndicator pulled out the guarantor documents literally at closing, at the signing party, when all the partners have come in, they're signing operating agreements and resolutions and other such documents for the manager to run the transaction. And it's like, you know, by the way, we've got these guarantees we need to have signed. You know, the boys in Chicago up at the last minute decided to make us guarantee the debt. I don't care if it unravels the deal. I couldn't care less about that. I would leave. If I were a member of that partnership, I would absolutely leave the partnership, and I would seek my money back, because that is just unconscionable that you would have that pulled on you at the last minute. But in any event, I guess that's my freebie for the day, or one of the freebies for the day. I've got another one coming. Don't put up with debt guarantees. If you're a passive partner and your ownership is like a peanut, you know, relative to the overall. But in any event, so the manager, the sponsor, et cetera, is going to take care of arranging the debt placement, and they're going to undertake the equity raise, which is where they find folks like you and I to invest our hard-earned capital. The manager's role is also tasked with managing the ongoing operations of the partnership and its assets throughout its existence. I would further note that BIA Planner, NP Ross CPAs, Nathan Ross, all the above, do not sell investments, nor do we recommend or promote specific investments, specific syndicators, specific sponsors, or specific lead partners. Rather, we seek to assist your understanding of, quote, what you're signing up for, end quote, regarding any opportunities you might be considering, and we will, if you engage with us, we will help you understand how to evaluate sponsors, opportunities, and private placement offerings so that you can select those projects which may, underscore may, or might, underscore might, achieve the highest odds of a favorable outcome regarding your participation. And so if any of you would like that sort of assistance, feel free to engage. First step, go to our website at baplanner.com and at least complete the first step, Form 1, the client profile, and then schedule a call with me. You can do that from the same website, baplanner.com, top right link on that homepage. So let's talk about some. This is going to be my second golden tip for you. And this is something that I'll promise you, most newbies, when it comes to those that invest in real estate private partnerships, will not have a clue as to what I mean when I talk about this. But every partnership, and this is true, by the way, of whether you're investing in real estate or you're investing in any kind of partnership, you're putting your money into a partnership, okay? Presumably, a big reason that you would do something, like invest in a partnership entity, is so you can make or generate cash flow. And typically, at least in these real estate partnerships, cash flows are passed out to the partners via the distribution process. And every operating agreement, or otherwise known as a partnership agreement, will provide language. We refer to it as waterfall language, where there will be a definition of the ranking or prioritizing of distributions by the partnership. You know, which class or which group of partners is going to get priority. And, you know, one of the big milestones is, when do you get your money back as a participating investor? And, you know, we can get distributions from assorted types of activities. I mean, if it's an apartment building and we rent living spaces, we obviously will collect a monthly rent. We also obviously have monthly expenditures. We got to pay the big one, is we got to pay the mortgage. We got to pay the insurance. We've got to pay property taxes, maybe not every month, but you're no doubt going to reserve for it every month at a minimum. And assorted other operating expenses, leasing staff, maintenance staff, repairs, assorted other items that, you know, utilities. You got to maintain the swimming pool. You've got all the normal expenses involved with operating rental real estate. And at the end of a period, be it a month, be it quarterly, semi-annually, annually even in some cases, you're typically going to see some excess. If it's successful, you've got 92% to 95% occupancy. You would hope at that level of occupancy there would be some excess at the bottom of that profit and loss. And again, profit and loss doesn't necessarily equal cash flow, because you've got some non-cash items on that profit and loss. We show depreciation on that profit and loss, even though depreciation isn't something we write a check for directly. And so let's hope that whenever you invest in one of these partnerships, you get some sort of frequency of distribution. And this is where the language in your operating agreement, it's very important for you to understand a key concept. The concept, or the question, is your distribution that you receive treated as a return of your investment or a return on your investment? And for those of you that maybe are scratching your head and asking, well, why does it matter? Well, the way most of these syndications work, these real estate partnerships, your lead partner or syndicator or sponsor may be allowing you to step in front of them, which they should, by the way, in most cases, given the egregious fees that are often being charged on the front end. And there's certain amounts of distribution that they may defer until you've gotten your money back. And then they swing for the fence in some cases. It's insane the amount of money that these partners take. It's almost as though you're treated as a lender, you know, where they feel like, well, gee, if I get them their original capital back, well, then that entitles me to a significantly higher split of the ongoing cash flows. And I guess I would vehemently disagree. And I would tell you, if you think about it, think about a stock. And I don't know right offhand if Apple pays dividends, but let's just play along and act like they do. And if Apple, if you paid your price per share to buy a share of Apple stock, let's keep it simple, and at some point you got a dividend distribution, and that was treated as giving you part of your initial purchase back, you wouldn't stand for that, I would assume. I hope you wouldn't. And yet that's what happens in a lot of these syndications, because the syndication world, unfortunately, is not, well, I guess fortunately and unfortunately, as the case may be, it's not highly regulated enough to where, beyond the point of initially notifying, you're not registering with the SEC, but every syndication offering under 506 B and C, you have to notify the SEC. I've forgotten the name of the filing, but once that's done, there's no annual review, no annual audit requirement. You know, it's crazy how there's nobody looking over the syndicator's shoulder. And, you know, I'm not saying it's illegal to treat distributions as a return of your equity instead of a return on your equity. I'm just suggesting that why in the world would you sign up for that? And here's where it matters, and this is what caught my attention today. The transaction I was looking at had a final distribution phase where once the syndicator had paid your money back, his split on remaining cash flow went up from, I think, a 20 or 25% promote, that's, think of that as an override, up to 50. Well, if you work through the math, it became apparent that he was going to generate several extra $1 million to his side of the ledger if he could get to the end and have returned enough of your capital. Let's say given all of your $100,000 investment back, well, okay, you know, that doesn't mean you don't share in the same profit that you should have if it was a typical legitimate partnership. I'm going to use the word legitimate. And so you don't want to sign up for deals like that. You want to make sure you understand, and this is just one example of issues that come up in these partnerships where you if you're not familiar with how where all the, well, I'm just going to say it, if you're not familiar with all where all the snakes are buried, you may fall prey to a syndication where you're getting what I'm going to say, you're getting less than you should be. In other words, you know, when we work with people, we're always focused on how do we get the maximum amount of their money back out of this transaction. And, you know, I start at the point where, you know, they're an investor. They're not a lender. So the fact that you get me a share of profits should not reduce my investment. That's why I invested in this creature, was to get profits. And so now all of a sudden you're going to restrict me. Now, none of this is all lined out. It's all explained in the operating agreement. It's just it's in language that you may not be familiar with. And that's why it's important that you have somebody that you can rely on to review transactions from your perspective and how this matters. And ultimately, at the end of the day, because as you can see in the current market, we still got a lot of distress in the current market, which typically relates back to two or three issues, the first of which was the 11-time rate increases that the Fed undertook back in, 22, 23, I think we finished them sometime 23, and the interest rates are still up significantly from where they were when many transactions started. And if you start a transaction with a mortgage rate of 2.9% or 3.2%, which is where a lot of them were at the time, but they were variable rate. The three-year bridge debt is the variety that's causing the most distress currently. So during that three-year period, the rates got adjusted higher 11 times. There's no money left when your interest rate has gone up that much. And in fact, in many cases, it's doubled. So the fact that unless you were able to raise your rents accordingly, which most weren't, there's not enough money to even pay, in some cases, there's not enough money to even pay the lender. Been a lot of properties given back and or foreclosed on. And by the way, this year, 2025, should see the largest number of distressed deals being taken back by lenders. I think the general feeling in the industry is that there will be no more kicking the can down the road. But in any event, you've it just gives you new things. If you're new to the syndication game, it gives you new things to look at, to vet with the syndicator, find out how they've handled the rough patches before, get references from prior partners, including those that aren't happy. Don't just call the happy ones. Let's call some that aren't happy. Ask specifically for those. Before your money leaves your account and goes to the syndicator, any questions, fair game. If it bothers them, better you bother them now than after you've given them your money, because you won't like the responses then. But in any event, so key term or key provision is how the waterfalls are defining what type of return the distributions consist of. Return of your investment or return on your investment. Okay, we're coming up here to the end of the show. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you once again. We'll be back on Friday right here on AM 700 KSEV, 11 a.m., and we hope you can join us. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.